Hello, and welcome to another Untitled Project on the College Cross Cast Network. My name is Saif Akadu, and I'm the manager here at collegecross.com. And joining me for the show today is our Connecticut connection, Dan Aristia. Dan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. It's finally, great to talk to you outside of the Twitter sphere.
Exactly. I always joke around. Like, it's always fun to actually converse with someone, especially for the first time. So it's good to actually hear each other's voice. So really excited for the show. I know I deserve some airing of grievances for Connecticut, but we'll get to the lax stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The state of Connecticut has a big problem with you.
Do it for the CT, Dan. Yeah. It's going to be good. All right. So, but before we get to all the fun lacrosse stuff, like as always, we like to get to know our guests. So, Dan, you know, just want to start out, your background. So, like, start with like where you're from and you know where you went to school, like you know for first, you know, through grade school.
Sure. I'm from a town called New Canaan, Connecticut. It's in Lower Fairfield County. Here, Connecticut has a little tail sticking out in the bottom left. Fairfield County is down in there. That's where we are. So I grew up there. I went to New Canaan High School, and you know, it's lacrosse is very much just a part of growing up in that part of Connecticut. It's been, you know, one of the sports that everybody plays more than anything else. It's bigger than just about everything except for football. Football is king everywhere, but, in Southern Connecticut, lacrosse is right up there.
So
you know, yeah.
So I was going to say, did you play in youth leagues or how'd you?
Yeah, I started playing, for the same reason everybody else does. It's because what all the kids do, you know, baseball, you sort of play until they take the ball off of the tee and then baseball goes away and you pick up the lacrosse stick and you go from there. So, I mean, when I was, you know, I'm an old man now, but, in the 90s and everything, early 90s, when I was a kid, you could start playing in third grade, and now around here you can start playing in first grade. You can get a kid out there, and it's just a helmet and shoes running around. But, we started playing in third grade. I started playing in fourth grade. I was an aspiring young attackman, and that lasted for 3 years until I had pretty decent speed, and you know, I was a pretty decent athlete. And my coach was like, "You ever play any defense or long pole?" I was like, "No." He's like, "Now here, hold this." And you know, it was defense for the rest of my career from there.
All right, on a heavy hitter, I'm sure.
About as heavy of a hitter as somebody who's 6'1" 140 can be. I hit as hard as I could.
Awesome. So what was like your youth team's name? I'll give them a shout out.
It's the New Canaan Rams. So we were the New Canaan Rams. I mean, this is, you know, long ago that it was just the town stuff. There were no clubs. There was nothing else. It was just, you know, you played for your town. That was it. So we were the New Canaan Rams. The New Canaan Rams are having a nice year in the high school circuit. They got their big game with Darien coming up in a week. It's what everybody circles around here now. Darien has sort of become the king of Connecticut lacrosse, and everybody's hoping to knock him off. They haven't been knocked off in the last, whatever it is, 58 attempts. They've won like 58 straight games. But, you know, New Canaan's got a solid squad this year. They'll get a shot against just about anybody.
Excellent. So after grade school, did you go to New Canaan High School? I'm just on there.
That's right.
Page.
Yeah. New Canaan High School, which is, you know, a really good program and has been for a long time. You know, they pop in and out of those top 20 rankings and everything. They, you know, I think they might have crept into the top 10 at one point when I was in high school. I was definitely not a starter when they were that high. it's a really storied, really, you know, proud program. It's got a lot of tradition. There's some big time players who have come here who you still see in the lacrosse world. You know, New Canaan's biggest alum is probably Andy Towers, who played, you know, at Brown. And you know, was one of the big flag bearers when the MLL was getting off the ground, coached at Dartmouth. You know, he's got a great career at just about every level of the game, and he's a New Canaan guy that we're proud to have represent us.
Yeah, shout out to In Your Face Lacrosse, of course. That was a great.
That's right. That's right.
AT's a good dude. So you played for the high school team, right?
I played for the high school team for all 4 years. We won a state title my junior year, which was, you know, obviously a thrill and everything. We had our struggles with Darien then, just like we have now, but that's the sort of the rivalry around here is the New Canaan Darien rivalry. So all 4 years of high school I played, and then I got some recruiting looks and everything. It was that D3 life for me. That hashtag D3 life is what I was all about. So I took my talents about an hour north of where I grew up to Trinity College, and I played there.
Oh, excellent. We're going to get to the college years, but I just want to just finish up high school. Did you do any writing when you were in high school, or where did that start up?
You know, I was a good student when it came to like English classes, and writing was always something I just kind of did for fun and everything. I didn't write for the newspaper or like the yearbook or anything like that, but it was always something that was kind of like a hobby, and you know, it was one of those kids where you kind of look at the guys on TV who are covering sports or covering, you know, athletics in some way. And it just looks like so much fun. It just looks like something you want to be doing. You know, you just get to stay even closer to this game that you love or whatever. And, you know, that was sort of what kept me close to writing as I was also playing lacrosse. And then obviously that's what, you know, as I am now, you know, like I said, I'm in my mid-30s, an old man, I can't really play too much lacrosse anymore, but it's a great way for me to really stay close to the sport that I love so much.
Oh, excellent. So growing up, New Canaan is actually really close to New York City. I'm assuming Yankees, Knicks stuff? Or
yeah, Boston, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, wait, you know, that was going to be the next question. Where is the dividing line in Connecticut? But first, who's your team?
It's about 50 minutes on the train to be at Grand Central Station from New Canaan. So, you know, it's really, you know, people even call it a New York City suburb at times. You know, my dad grew up in the Bronx, and so we didn't really have a whole lot of choices when it came to teams growing up. When we watched sports in the house, he put on the Yankees and the Knicks and the Giants, and none of us really played hockey. So, I mean, if I had to pick one, I guess it would be the Rangers, just because that's sort of what falls into that family of New York teams. Like, those are the four that just kind of go together. So, you know, I pull for the Rangers, but I only sort of haphazardly watch hockey once in a while. I haven't watched a lot this year because they weren't very good. So that's the kind of hockey fan I am. But yeah, the Yankees and the Knicks, sadly, are like the top of my fandom tree.
You can always dot Philly, Dan. You know, we'll write letters of recommendation if you want.
It was quite a battle because my mom is from Springfield in Pennsylvania and is a big. I mean, she's not a big sports person, but when Philly's on, she cheers for Philly. So she, you know, we had the sort of New York Philly thing, very, very mildly, very benign New York Philly thing happening in my household growing up.
Come home, Dan. Just come home.
Yeah.
So yeah, where is
fire up the song.
I'm sure she was stoked for the Super Bowl. So where is the dividing line in Connecticut? I'm assuming, you know, part of them are Sox fans, right, in Boston?
Yeah. You know, I would say more of the state would identify as New England. You know, you get a lot of Pats fans because New England sort of does really encompass Connecticut. But once you get, I mean, if you make it to like New Haven, even, you're sort of up into, which is like 50 minutes, 45 minutes north of here. You know, once you leave Fairfield County, you're probably pretty much in Boston country, in Red Sox territory and Bruins territory and all that. You know, you start getting to a place where like the commute to New York City would be over 90 minutes or 2 hours. Like once you've gone that far, you're probably talking to Boston fans.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So growing up, did you sneak down to the city? I'm assuming your dad's side still had family in the New York area, or did you kind of just...
You know, most of my dad's side of the family lived as the move to Florida thing. They were all,
oh, gotcha.
I mean, like, you know, my dad's family was like Sicilian and everything. So
they followed
the arc that everybody else from that part of the world followed, which was, you know, they came to New York and then they were here for a long, long time. They sort of got old, retired, and moved to Florida.
So,
they lived, you know, most of my dad's family lived out their years and everything down there. There's still a few of them left down there. We would go into the city a pretty good amount. I mean, obviously when you're in high school, you know, the small town of New Canaan, Connecticut, it's like, you know, you can cruise around looking for the house party once in a while, or you can, you know, maybe hop a train and go to, you know, Radio City or Irving Plaza or something like that, see a concert of somebody coming through. It was pretty easy to get in and out and all that. So, you know, that was definitely something that was nice to have.
Excellent. So moved on to Trinity College up in Hartford, correct?
Yeah. Yep. The home is where the Hartford is. Went up to Hartford for Trinity College. And, you know, I was there for, I was only there for 2 years. I played lacrosse there and everything. And I really liked, you know, my lacrosse world, my lacrosse team. And, you know, coach was a great guy and everything. But just about everything else about the school just wasn't really working out for me very much. So I finished getting my degree at the wonderful University of Connecticut. And that's, you know, which tragically does not have lacrosse that can't be fixed soon enough. How they don't have lacrosse is beyond me.
We'll definitely delve into that a little later. But I guess more affinity for UConn, since that's where you finished.
More affinity for UConn because that's where I got my degree from. And also, like, when you're growing up, your college sports team here is Connecticut. The basketball team is great. You know, so all those years where the Knicks were terrible, it was like, all right, well, at least UConn's good. And we got those wonderful years, like 2014, where UConn men and women both won the national championship. It happened twice. I don't know if you knew that. Some people know that. People forget that. People forget that, so we remind them all the time.
So, were you there for the 04 run, or were you Jimmy time? I guess I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, you know, I was going to school at UConn in Stamford, which is like much closer to down here than Storrs is.
Gotcha.
You know, I would you know make the trip up to Storrs once in a while. I saw a couple of Q's games up there, you know, on campus and everything, not in the Civic Center, but at Gamble and everything, which is like a ridiculous college basketball environment. If you can go see a UConn game there against a team like Syracuse or something like that, not that they ever play anymore because RIP Big East, but absolutely take the chance to do that. It's a spectacular place to watch basketball.
I was just going to ask you about, like, I'm sure you must have been a big East fan growing up, you know, in the 80s and 90s.
New
Jersey, Big East basketball was what's up. Yeah.
Big East basketball was the best. The Big East tournament was like a highlight of the year for sports fans around the New York area because you buy the ticket for the day to go sit in Madison Square Garden and watch games where it's like, even if the teams maybe didn't have great seasons, you just knew every game for the whole day was going to be awesome. Like it was going to be like a 3-point game with a minute left and teams were going to be just going at each other hard. It was just so much fun to go to the Big East tournament. We would love that. Highlight of the year was Big East tournament.
I remember that Iverson Ray Allen year at the championship so well. Like, that was so great. So, did you do any writing at UConn or again?
Yeah, that was when I started doing sort of my media thing. I started writing a little more, covering just little events for the paper, not necessarily sports, but just things going on around campus and everything. You know, the occasional sports piece on a local team that might not even have been UConn's. Like, I went and covered University of Fairfield's lacrosse team for a couple things, their volleyball team for a couple things, and just started, dipping my toes in the water a little bit about, seeing if that sort of career path and lifestyle would be right for me and everything, and if I thought that, that writing for a profession and not just for fun was something that, could really be sustainable.
Now, UConn has a pretty active club team. Were you friendly or get to know any of those guys?
Not as much, not really. You know, at that point, I was pretty focused on tuning up in the classroom and everything like that. And I was playing lacrosse sort of, I had started coaching when I had gotten to UConn. Since I was so much closer to home, my lacrosse fix sort of came via the coaching world rather than the playing and being just plugged into, putting on the pads world. So, the coaching thing really was my lacrosse fix at that point in my life.
Oh, gotcha. So I was going to get into that as well, because I remember when we first met on email, like you mentioned you were a coach. So how did you, how did you first get your first job as a coach? And
If you're in New Canaan, Darien, that this kind of area, obviously the youth programs are enormous. The youth chapter of U.S. lacrosse, they're the biggest chapter in the country, is in Darien, Connecticut. Insane in terms of like enrollment and number of kids in it and everything. So they are always looking for people to come and coach. And I just wanted to stay around the game. So, I essentially went to the guys who run New Canaan Youth Lacrosse, and I was like, listen, I'm in the area now. I'm in Stamford. I'm going to school. But if you need a guy to help out, if you need a little, a staff at some level, anything like that, I played here growing up, played in college. I would love to give back to the program here because, that's what solid program building is all about. I would love to help out. And they were like, sure, we need some guys in the eighth grade. So, I started out just kind of coaching, evaluating and tryouts, doing, the eighth grade B team, that kind of stuff. And it's just sort of grew from there into, coaching an eighth grade A team. And then, ultimately that led me to coaching, club lacrosse in the summertime for the Connecticut Chargers. which, you know, was a club started by Jeff Braemeyer, who's the head coach in Darien, who did, you know, a remarkable job sort of tapping into that club world before it had blown up to the thing it is now. And just sort of capturing all the kids in the area to make these elite teams, go to these elite tournaments and stuff like that. So he needed coaches. And then when the summer ended, he was like, "You want to coach high school lacrosse?" And I was like, "You bet I want to coach high school lacrosse." So, I started out, I went to Darien, and which was like, it's a tough pill to swallow. Again, New Canaan Darien is pretty fierce as a rivalry. So to go, you know, from growing up here to coaching there was not always easy. And I still get a pretty good amount of flack for it from people in the lacrosse world around here. But hey, man, they wanted me to coach and New Canaan didn't. So,
so given the fact that lacrosse is so big in Connecticut, like, is it almost like a running joke that UConn doesn't have a team? I mean, we did a whole post on the UConn donor back in December, Mr. Peter J. Worth, making a comment, like pretty much calling out the athletic director and all the rich people in Fairfield County, as you said, to just get it together and get a team. Like, you know, what is the mentality around the state? Is this like, where is that? Obviously, it's not the biggest issue in Connecticut, but you know what I mean. Like, it should have been done by now. You know, even
Connecticut, we've got quite a share of issues. Most of them fiscal, and most of them pretty messy. It is not a. If you're thinking about moving to Connecticut and you like having your money in your pocket, don't move to Connecticut. It's I don't even know if it's a joke, but it's like people just look around the state and they look at where kids who grow up here and play lacrosse here growing up, you know, if not even just from Fairfield County, but kids from further north, you go up to, you know, you go to Newtown, to Glastonbury, to Cheshire, you can just keep going north if you want to. And this is just the public schools. You have kids going to play at D1 and high level D1 programs all the time. Like, some of these kids would definitely stay in state if they had a program to go to. And that's not even to think about the kids who go play at the D3 level for whatever reason, whether, you know, they just prefer that level of commitment, or that's just, you know, where their talent level maybe suits best, or whatever it is. But like, there's a wealth of lacrosse talent in the state of Connecticut, all over the state of Connecticut, in public schools. If you start including the private schools, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, the schools like Brunswick and Salisbury and you know, the Tafts of the world and things like that, and the Founders League as a whole is insane. There's just so much talent here, and you look around and you're like, man, if our state school just had a lacrosse team, there's no way they wouldn't be able to draw some of these kids. I mean, you know, the kid who's going to commit to Hopkins or UConn, like, we know the choice he's probably going to make, but you can still pull some of those kids towards UConn and start some program building and be competitive. You'd think, you know, relatively soon, the Big East is a place where, you know, you'd hopefully they would wind up, who knows, with the way lacrosse conferences were, the American Athletic Conference or whatever joke we're in is, you know, non-existent in the lacrosse world. So, but there's so much talent and there's so much ability across the state that having a program at UConn just makes too much sense for it to not happen.
Absolutely. For no other reason than it's just a good insurance in case Denver moves on, you know, if they start just grab UConn. Like, as I was saying in the article, I cited to a 2013 article. I guess you may know him. This is, you know, we didn't know each other at the time, and I didn't know you coached for Darien, but Coach Bromier, am I saying his name?
Yeah, Braemeyer. Braemeyer.
Shout out to him. But back in 2013, you know, it was, seemed like a, you know, another one of these waves of like, why don't we have a team? And he said, yeah, it's a shame we have like 80 high school varsity teams in Connecticut and we don't have a men's program to go with it. So
yeah. I mean, it's just talent, and the game is exploding obviously everywhere in the country.
What makes it even funnier is the fact, you know, that just dark money pit, with all due respect to the football team, you know what I mean? Like, how much money they spent on the stadium, and they're just like, are you kidding me? Like, a fraction of that would be a good endowment for the team.
My wife's aunt and uncle, you know, are huge UConn fans. Well, her uncle is. He's a UConn alum, and he loves UConn. He's basketball is his favorite sport, but he likes to support the university. So we go to football games. He has season tickets that are incredible seats. They're like, you know, they're near the 50-yard line. They're not too far back. Like, you know, I say that like it's hard to get those for a UConn game, but you know, you go to these games and sometimes you look at the teams and you're just like, man, oh man, God, do we stink? And you want it to be better, but you don't understand the way kind of football works, and football just sort of drives the bus for athletics at universities. So, you know, that's the way it is. We use his tickets way more often to go to basketball games, and more often lately we go to ladies basketball games because how fun are those? But, you know.
Yeah, it seems like,
our football team is not great. Not great for sure. There's always a couple of guys out there who are good. Like, we'll send a first-round pick to the NFL every, you know, couple of years. Like, you know, the team will stink, but Byron Jones will come out and look great. Or the guys with insane raw athletic ability will come out and look great. But we can't quite get that full 22 of guys. You know, we ain't Bama or anything, so.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I get the idea. Make yourself attractive. Maybe ACC or Big Ten scoops you up because of proximity.
God willing. Yeah. You know, I'm not too keen on going to another, you know, UConn Memphis game. Like, that just it does nothing for me. You know, like, where I grew up and when I grew up, like, I know that Big East is never coming back. Like, those days are gone. Thank you, football, for that. But, I mean, like, what am I supposed to get pumped to watch UConn play Memphis or UConn play Tulane? Or, I mean, they played UCF this year, the national champion, IML, but. You know, that obviously didn't go well since UCF didn't lose to anybody. You know, I still go up there once in a while because, you know, there are the occasional games in their schedule like that. Like UCF, if a team like that's coming to town, it's, you know, you can go get a ticket and you can go see some high-level players. You know, I went to a UConn-Louisville game, Teddy Bridgewater's last year, and everyone was talking about how he was going to go so high in the draft. So I was like, cool, Teddy Bridgewater's, you know, going to be at the stadium. We can go see him. Once in a while, you go to see the other team. But you don't go to see UConn all that often. Not lately. Anyway.
So now that much more experience in writing, what's like your most enjoyable part about like when like actually going to these games? And it seems, you know, your writing this year has been fantastic. Anyone who hasn't been reading Dan Aristia development series throughout this season, I think you and it was mentioned the scholar just brought so much to the site this year. And your experiences writing, like being behind the fence, writing as opposed to like actually planning the games. You know, do you like one more than the other, or do you just both like them equally?
You know, I like them both a lot. I don't think there's a guy out there in any sport who was, you know, played at a decently high level and then stopped playing and is at any point ready to be like, man, I don't miss it at all. I don't wish I was still out there. You know, like, of course I would love to still be playing lacrosse, and maybe I'll dip my toe into an over 30 league one of these days, but I don't know, you know, got a couple kids on the way. I don't know how much time I'll have for that, but I really do enjoy the writing because there's a level of access, which is obviously incredible. You know, you get to, I go to Yale Albany last weekend, and you know, you don't just get to watch this incredible game with just like worlds of talent. There were whatever it was, 10 kids drafted in the MLL draft a couple days before in that game. You know, Yale had 6 seniors drafted by themselves. And you get to watch this incredible play happen. And everybody, when you watch a sporting event, whether you watch it on TV or you watch it in person, whatever, you probably have questions about things that happen in the game that you want to know more about. You want to know, coach, why do you think this happened? Was there something about your preparation that allowed you to have success here? Was there something they were doing that was stifling you there? I get to go and find out the answers to those questions. Like, I get to sort of, you know, seek out that information, which is awesome to me. You know, I get to go expand how much I know about the game. I get to learn every single time I do it. You know, you have an opportunity to go talk to an Andy Shea or a Scott Marr or whatever coach that, you know, is nice enough to give you a minute or two of their time. You get to ask them about what they do to prepare a team as good as their team to play, you know, one of the other great college teams in the country. So I love, you know, learning a little bit more about the game every time I go write. And then, you know, the joy of it is, of course, you get to sort of write the recap. And for the stuff that I am lucky enough to do for you guys for College Cross, I get to have some fun doing it. I get to, you know, throw some memes in there and throw some jokes in there and all that. And I get to keep it lighthearted, which is obviously, you know, that's something that I care about too. I don't think we should ever take it so seriously that it's just, you know, it becomes more that you got to remember you're playing a kid's game. Let's have some fun with it. So, it's a blast. It's just a total blast for me that there are times where I can't believe it, where I'll be sitting in a press box. You know, like I did Army Navy, a crowd of 15,000 people up at West Point, and you're sitting in the press box, and you're like, somebody wants me to be here to tell them what happened. Like, that's how lucky am I? How lucky am I? You know, you still have those things happen.
No, I was just thinking, sometimes when I get frustrated watching a Hopkins game, I always have to remind myself, these are children playing the game for free, for my enjoyment.
Yeah, they are out there to entertain you, you know, you know, frankly, they should be not playing for free, but that's a whole nother podcast.
Exactly.
But, you know, like, you know, exactly. These kids, you know, they're 18, 19, 20. I don't know. Some of those kids, depending on where they went to high school and what their road was to college, maybe they're 25, who knows. But, you know, they're still out there and they're playing the kids' game. They're playing the same game that you learned to play, whatever, in fourth, fifth grade. And they're just doing it at the level that can astonish you at times. You know, I was at Brunswick Hill Academy last night, and that might be the highest level high school lacrosse game I've ever seen. Like, it was kids moving around out there. It looked and felt like a D1 game. And, you know, they're playing that at the high school level. It's just the way the game's going now. So, you know, again, every time I go out to these games and I get to turn around and then write about what I saw, I feel honored that I get to do that.
Now, before we get to more to, like, you know, this season and just the landscape before the tournament, as a coach, do you take some of these insights that you get from when you ask the coaches, like, it's something like you see and you want to maybe try out with your kids later on? You definitely have, like, you know, all three perspectives now, you know, as a player.
Oh, yeah.
And now as a coach.
Yeah,
now,
sure.
Now I'm sure that's
For sure. You know, especially when you watch, like last night I was saying, I was at Hill Academy, you watch them play and the way they take the indoor game outdoors, you know, they had a lot of success against Brunswick, you know, in the middle of the game a little bit. They went on a nice little run, running these two-man games and these pairs offenses and everything. And obviously with a guy like Brody Merrill coaching them, you know they're going to be doing it really well. But you watch the way they do it and where they do it on the field and how everybody moves. And you just, you know, you sort of try and take some of that. And now, you know, I don't coach at the high school level much anymore because, you know, my day job doesn't really allow me to do that. But I still try and help out with 8th grade teams, 7th grade teams, things like that. And trying to impart that into an 8th grader is very, very challenging. But you still, you know, you try and get you're always trying to see something out there that maybe you didn't see before, or maybe you didn't know, you know, there was a way you could do it. If you set up your offense like this, or you set up your defense like this, you can make this happen here. And, you know, it's sort of the moving pieces and affecting the way the field is balanced and things like that. I don't think anybody who's coached ever really stops doing that. You know, I've been to games with Coach Braymeyer, who's been at Darien, you know, forever. He's started the program there in the 80s. He's still there. So, but you go to a game with him. I went to a game with him, whatever it was, 6-5 years ago. We're watching a North Carolina game that was played up at Giant Stadium. They had a four-team event there. He's watching warm-ups, and he sees a drill that UNC does in warm-ups that he likes, that he's like, that really is good. Our kids can learn from that. That's something that's impactful. He puts it in at practice the next day, and it's still now today part of Darien's warm-up routine. It's called Carolina. So, you know, he's a guy who goes from place to place. As he sees these things on the field, he makes his little notes, and he's like, let's try and put that in. Let's see if our kids can do that. So, you know, that's the great thing about the sport, too, is that, you know, you can always be pulling from what somebody else is doing and putting your spin on it and you know, making it your own and trying to see, you know, if you can teach your kids to do it that well.
And before we close out on the personal stuff, so favorite moment as a player and favorite moment as a coach?
As a player, it's probably, man, I don't know. A player is probably somewhere, honestly, probably somewhere along the recruiting trail when you're doing, and when I was getting recruited and everything, it wasn't like now where, you know, you're an 8th grader, everybody knows about you. It's kids all got a highlight film and they're at 14 showcases a year. You know, for me, I was getting recruited. It's the late 90s. It's the early 2000s. You have the summer of your junior year and there's like two events you can go to. There was Top 205, which was the camp everybody went to. And then you went to some other one that you thought would be a good fit. You looked over the coaches that would be there and that's where you were targeting. So that's where you went. So for me, it was a camp called Peak 200. But that summer when you're doing that, like as you go to these showcases or you play on a showcase team, if you were lucky enough to make one, you feel pretty cool because there's coaches there and some of them, you know, really want to talk to you and they have ideas for you. They want to introduce themselves. So it's a cool experience to play in a game and then have people come up to afterwards and be like, I want you to play for my team, you know, doing that whole thing. So that was always cool. But, you know, it's also, I mean, playing defense, like anytime you get a chance to score a goal, like, come on, what's better than that? And again, like the long stick midi position and the close defender position now is a place where there's athletes like you wouldn't believe. You got kids like Sean Mayall at Denver where it's like maybe he should just stay on and play offense. I don't know. but
I love when Robert Kuhn drops one for Hopkins. I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like a really good pole goal now. They're way more commonplace, I think, than they used to be. But, you know, being able to come over and run a fast break and just move the ball to the attackman early so you know you can get it back and really step into one. Oh, man, does that feel good.
It better go in or you better retain possession. That's one thing.
The coach was like, the instruction was always you score or you miss the net and you make sure there's backup. Exactly. You do not let him make a save. You do not let it, under any circumstances, let that goalie make a save. Because they're running a fast break the other way and you got a short stick back there defending you. So when they score, it's your fault.
So let's talk a little bit more about the game generally. Okay, we'll talk about the season first. So like I said, I've just been loving everything you've been writing this year. So how would you characterize this 2018 as, you know, compared to the season past? Do you find it more entertaining? I know there's been a little bit of talk. Lex Filmroom put out a note about like the pace is actually plateaued recently, but you know I don't really see too much. Yeah, the games are still seeming exciting, but just your overall take on the season, and then we'll dive into more.
You know, I think it's been great. I like it when there's this much parity. You know, for a while, it looked like there was maybe a top two and then everybody else. Now it turns out maybe there's more than top two. And maybe there really isn't like a just straight up great team that's going to grab that number one spot and just roll through people all the way to the, you know, the championship weekend or whatever. I like when that happens. I like the idea that you can have a weekend where you can have upsets like, you know, where BU can win against Bucknell in the first game of the Patriot League tournament. You know, like you got a freshman out there doing incredible freshman things and Chris Gray, you know, shout out to Marissa, biggest BU fan in the world. But, you know, I like that when there's a lot of parity, when there's like, you know, like a top 40 who's good. Like a top 40 teams probably who are legitimately, you know, in a big old blob, where obviously one is better than 40. But, you know, there's just this really long list of teams that are really pretty good, that are worth your time to go watch play, that have players who are exciting. So I've really liked this season in that regard, and that every weekend has given us, you know, like an upset or two. Obviously the midweek games are, you know, the Tuesdays are for the hunter. Quint likes to say, you know, we like those upsets in the midweek, but you know, you've now had, I think we've had four different number one teams, which is, I think is good, which is healthy. The only thing I wish we had is I personally think sports in general are just way more fun when there's like a villain, when there's like a guy that everyone hates. Like, you know, as a Yankees fan, I'm well aware that the team I cheer for is the villain every year. And sports is just more fun when you're just like, man, I just wish they didn't do well. Like, you know, there's something about the way they play or the way they carry themselves, their swag or something that makes me want to be like, oh man, I just want to see them go down. Like, I think sports is way more fun with a villain. I don't think lacrosse really has a villain this year. Like, I don't think there's anybody out there who's like, man, I just hope they lose. Who's like not actually losing.
You're totally right, because everyone acts, especially like with March Madness, everyone's like, oh, they love the Cinderellas, but that's not really true, because the ratings never
I'm out there to watch Duke lose. Come on. Yeah, like, who's knocking Duke out? Like,
people like the 24-year, was it 1990 year, where 99, where Duke versus UConn, like that game was amazing, and I'm sure that game
was great. I mean, I'll take that. I'm a bigger fan of Duke versus like Lehigh. Like, you know, when Lehigh upsets Duke in the first round, I'm like, ooh, this is great. Ooh, I want this right. I want this right in my veins.
But yeah,
and that's even better with those Duke teams, because it's not even that the team is a villain, but there's also like a villain on the team. Like this year, I can't wait for Grayson Allen to lose. I hate that guy. Sports is more fun when you have that guy you can point at. You know, you can do the Scarface, say goodnight to the bad guy routine. It's nice to have. It's sports. Sports are just fun when there's a villain.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, like those Miami teams from the 80s, like sports needs a Goliath or a hegemonic team that people try to take down, and the other half love. You know what I mean? The winning. You know. you get a lot more fans once you start winning. So that's
I
totally hear you on that. But
I wish lacrosse had one of those this year. We really don't. I don't think lacrosse has a bona fide villain. So, you know, it would be nice if we did, but that's the only thing this season doesn't have that I wish this season had.
Okay, so who's your most underrated team of 2018? They can still even be in the top 10. Maybe you think they deserve more credit than they do, but who's your most underrated team?
Underrated. Let's see. You know, I don't know if they're underrated, but I feel like Loyola kind of doesn't get the buzz every week that maybe they should get. You know, they're a team that's just been right there somewhere between 5 and 10, whatever. Maybe some people had them as high as 4 at certain points all year. That's about as like consistent as we've been, as Loyola's just been there. Their losses are not bad losses. They might have been when they happened, but it turns out those losses weren't really that bad. They have one of the more exciting players to watch in the country in Pat Spencer. And, you know, I really think there's, you know, they have Foster Huggins leading the nation as far as last I looked and caused turnovers in the defensive end. The freshman attack are coming along really nicely. And those are guys who continue to contribute. And they've improved all year, I think, as Spencer has gotten more comfortable looking for them and everything. None of them are, you know, Olmstead and Lindley are not guys probably who are going to do a ton of dodging. You're not going to see a whole ton of unassisted goals out of them. But they've learned their role in the offense really well. So, and I think, you know, they're getting better at the face-off X. They weren't great. They've sort of struggled against the big marquee guys. But Loyola sort of is a team where it's like, maybe, you know, I feel like you could just blank and all of a sudden it's championship weekend and they're there. And you're like, oh, wait, this team is actually really good. Like, how come we never really considered them to be in this level with all these other teams, as we talked about this, like throughout the season, everyone's just kind of been like, yeah, they're good. They're really good. But you know, they're good. That's it. And that's the end. And I think maybe they need just a little bit more credit than they're getting.
I think that's a great take. I agree. Loyola, with teams in the same range, like, you know, Rutgers has been like that 5 through 10, and they definitely get a lot more hype, but deservedly so. I think Rutgers is a good team, but I agree. Loyola's been solid all year long. I think that Bucknell loss took if they were 10-2, I'm pretty sure that you know, they'd probably be in the top 5 right now.
Yeah. And it's like the Bucknell loss really isn't even that bad. Like Bucknell was like a crack. And, you know, when it happens, everyone was like, Bucknell, come on. It's like Will Sands and a bunch of dudes who, you know, just threw the pads on that day. But now it's like, oh, wait, Bucknell is actually like really pretty good. So, yeah, although, I mean, I don't know. Bucknell's season is probably over. I don't know. But
we'll definitely get the bracketology. So who's your biggest surprise of 2018?
As a team,
we'll go both. I was going to said then beg the surprise as a player, but like, as your team, like, who did you not think was going to do that well, and you know, kind of surprised you?
You know, I would almost go the reverse and go Army has really surprised me as a team that just sort of fell off like really, really hard after their Rutgers win. I think they have one win or whatever since they beat Rutgers. They're losing to teams that are really not great, and that's an offense where it's like, you know, you thought with guys like David Sims and Connor Glancy and like Nate Jones and those guys that they would be able to pump some goals in. And man, they are, I mean, I don't know if you're an analytics guy or not, but, you know, Lax Film does a great job with those analytics. And you can just go down their offensive roster. Their shooting analytics stats are just miserable, are just terrible. So, you know, Army, you know, starting the season, I think in the top 10, or at least creeping into the top 10, at, you know, before their meteoric fall, I really thought was going to be good. I really thought was going to do well. Their defense is always awesome. Like, for my money, Johnny Surdick's the best on ball defender in the country, and maybe just the best defender, period, in the country. And that offense is just like just totally, totally tanked. You know, I really thought they would hang on and just hang in that 10 range and, you know, contend in that absolutely brutal Patriot League. But, you know, I've gone and watched them play a bunch of times this year, and I just wish their offense was better. Wish the offense was better.
It's a shame too, because like their defense like during this admittedly bad run since that Syracuse triple overtime loss. I mean, they lost more couple games by 3 and one game by 3 and one by 4, but like five of their losses have been by 7 points.
Yeah,
and like, it's like it's like these really low scoring, like 7-8, 6-8, 7-9 games that, like, if you could just find one goal and stop them one goal somewhere in the game, like, you know, they could be, you know, above water as opposed to 5-7 right now.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, because it's Army, you know, just like the nature of their coach is a great guy, and you know the nature of the kid that's going to go play at a place like Army. You know those kids are leaving it all out there every week. Like, those Absolutely. Kids play their hearts out every single week. And, you know, I really, really thought they would be better, or they would be able to, you know, just squeeze out, like you said, just a couple of those plays to you know, to come up with the couple of goals that it would take to win. But, you know, like losing at Colgate, losing, like, you know, again, at BU, like, those are games that they should be winning. Like, the Army that started the season wins those games. You know, they hung 18 on UMass in week one. Like, what happened to that? What happened to that offense? So,
it's, yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Obviously, great. No,
yeah, the other surprise for the team, although I shouldn't be surprised, is Notre Dame. Their offense is, I mean, putrid. It's just boring. Like, the guys that are out there are so offensively talented. You know, I don't blame Ryder Garnsey now for wanting to test those transfer waters. You know, it just looks like a program that's still just trying to win games 6-5 every week or something like that. And that's just, I just don't feel like that's where the game's going right now. You know, there's just the level of athlete and the level of speed on the field every week. I just don't know if that's something you can do and you know, be sustainable. So, you know, we'll see. If I know Jake is like clamoring for Kevin Corrigan's head on a post every single week, but I don't even know if that what it's going to take, though. You would hope not. You would hope maybe, you know, just some kind of shakeup or some kind of personnel thing. But, you know, I felt the same way last year with a guy like Perkovic, where I was like, how come Perkovic just never has that game where he scores like 6 goals and just runs through people? And it's because the offense he plays in stinks. Like, the scheme he plays in stinks.
It's, yeah, it hasn't been offensively pleasing for sure over no. Notre Dame.
No, but it's tough to watch. I mean, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, where it was like, I think it was 2 weeks ago when I wrote it, but they didn't have a guy on their roster with double-digit assists, and it was like, we played like 10 or 11 games, folks. Like, none of you guys can manage 10 assists yet? Like, that's insane.
One thing that impressed me about you, just speaking of surprises, this – actually, I was going to say, isn't surprising because this is one of the ones you nailed about North Carolina. I think you were pretty.
Oh,
you were like one of the first person. You were like, yeah, you got your ticket and got on the board like week 3.
Yeah, I got on board week 1. I was like, oh, UNC is actually bad. They had their week 1 win, and in my first Arrestia development, one of my first things trending down was UNC in the postseason. I was like, this team is bad. I don't care what anybody says. This team is not good. Their defense is very, very mediocre. I didn't understand just how bad their defense was until it took a couple weeks for it to reach that. And I was like, their offense is good, but you know, their top six is good. But like, I don't know what they're doing wrong. But like, yo, you need a buzzer beater to beat St. John's. And like that train got really lonely right around the time UNC hit 6-0.
Yeah, when they beat Hopkins, I was like, damn.
Yeah. I was, you know, after that, I was like, all right.
I was like, Dan told me this was going to be a gimme. I can't believe we just lost it.
I'm not backing off of this. I'm not backing off of this. I'm owning this. Yeah, and they made it to whatever they made it to. They made it to, what, 6 or 7-0, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was the only one still saying it. I was like, I'm going to die on this hill. North Carolina is actually bad. I don't care what anybody says. They're bad. And now here we are. They lost like 7 or 8 in a row from there. They managed to beat, again, the team we just said is also bad, Notre Dame. And they're missing everything. You know, and it's like, last year, were they even that good? Where did they go, 500 last year? And the year before, like, they win the title, but they were playing playoff games in the regular season because they had been so bad that they needed a ridiculous run to even make the ACC tournament that they had to win to make the NCAA tournament that, like, Chris Cloutier became a lacrosse god in to carry them all the way through to the title. You know, I really don't think North Carolina's been that good now for, like, a couple of years, and I still don't think they're very good.
This is one of Adam's biggest points. He's like, since 2015 year, they were a monster, 13-4. But yeah, since then, he calls them like the greatest 500 team of all time.
Yeah. I mean, they're 500 this year. They were 500 last year. And I don't know.
They were like one game above 500 before the ACC tournament, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I
think they just went on that run in 2016.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, God bless him for doing it. I can't take the banner away from you, but, you know, you know how good you really were. And it wasn't great. Like, you know, it just wasn't.
So who do you think will be sweating the most on Selection Sunday?
It's tough to say now because you don't know how these other how all the tournaments are going to play out. Given the result we have in hand, I'm gonna just go ahead and say Bucknell. Like if Loyola doesn't win the Patriot League tournament now, you got to think Bucknell has no shot. Like that's not I just don't think that's going to be a three team league, and you know they're also going to need probably the favorites in the other respective conference tournaments and conferences to win those just so they're not also eating up, you know, at large bids to leave one for them. I just don't know if the committee who just seems to favor, you know, the blue bloods and everything like that, you know, you might even throw Rutgers, I guess, in this conversation, depending on how the Big Ten treats them and where they sit in the RPI and stuff like that, which is a stupid stat, but whatever. I'm going to say Bucknell though. I'm going to say Bucknell has the quality of wins and a good quality schedule that is good enough to go to the tournament. But I think the round one loss to BU, especially if Loyola now doesn't win the Patriot League tournament and you don't get some other favorites winning the other tournaments, I don't think they're gonna wind up getting in. They'll be right. I think they'll be right there.
So do you have a team that you think, if they get in, can make a run that people aren't talking about? Let's say outside the, you know, your normal top five. So a team that you think could make a run that does not be in, like, on the front pages.
Not on the front page. Is Hopkins in the top five? I don't know.
In my top five. Top five of my
heart. In your top five, I'm sure. You know, I really do like Hopkins to make some noise and you know, and obviously in the Big Ten tournament and in the NCAA tournament if they get there. If Girard is healthy for Girard Osieri is healthy for Penn State, the way they're playing now, their offense is playing now. I know they just you know took a hell of a game to Rutgers. I think Penn State is a team that could make some noise. Their offense is really, really good. Really good. And Chris Sabia is a guy who's you know, he hasn't been as good maybe as people thought he might be this year, but he's still a guy capable of erasing a matchup. He's a guy you can kind of just throw out there if it's on, you know, one of the Connor Kellys of the world, then nobody can do that. But he's a guy who, you know, against some teams will be able to just erase a player. And if they're crushing the faceoff X because Arceri is healthy, then that's obviously a big difference maker for them. So I would say, you know, both teams in the Big Ten, but Hopkins for sure. I really like Hopkins and Penn State.
No, and I won't hold you to it. We'll clear out the lane for our Yale talk. But before we get there, do you have who's your Final Four? If you're
I think Albany is there for sure. Only because TD Erland. I mean, you want to talk about surprises this year? Who saw this coming? Like T.D. Erland is winning whatever he came into the Yale game winning north of 80% of his faceoffs. I think he might still be. And Yale did what gave you the blueprint. I think I had written this, gave you the blueprint to beat Albany. The problem is nobody else can do that. You know, you have to dominate Erland at the faceoff X and you have to keep Albany on defense where they're really just average at best for extended amounts of time. And you're probably also going to need a superstar or two, a guy like Ben Reeves. And you're going to need a defense that is physical and great at winning individual matchups and doesn't have to slide that often. And, like, there's just – I mean, how many teams fit that bill? Like, there just aren't many. So I'll take Albany. I'll take Maryland to go on Connor Kelly. I'll take Denver for a lot of the same reasons as you would take Albany, because Trevor Baptiste is going to win some possessions and you know, win a lot of possessions. And their offense, when it's clicking, is actually, you know, one of the more beautiful offenses to watch in all of college lacrosse. Like, their spacing is ridiculous. They're really, really good on the offensive end. And they're super fun to watch in transition because there's so many athletes out there. And then I'll take Yale. I'll take Yale not because, you know, I've been sort of on the Yale train lately, but I really think they're playing just incredibly well at the right time. You know, they're peaking at the right time. They've got a guy in Ben Reeves who can take games over. Connor Mackey has sort of exploded onto the, into the face-off, you know, stud discussion as a guy who's up there in that higher tier after what he did against Albany. And you have a defenseman and a freshman and Chris Fake who was winning the matchup with Connor Fields, although it turns out Connor Fields was a little gimpy before he left the game with an injury, and then shut out Tahoka for the rest of the game when Connor Fields left. So, you know, that's a defense that I think is able to match up with most people. And they got a pretty good freshman goaltender in Jack Starr. So, you know, I think Yale has all the pieces to be there. But I think that fourth spot is very much in flux. I think for me, the Albany, Maryland, Denver seems to be squads that I think will get there. Denver, more than anything, on the strength of Baptiste, not because of the rest of the field. Because just, I mean, like, Duke is better everywhere else than Denver except the faceoff X. So, you know, Duke could easily be there. And, you know, I think Hopkins could be there. You know, there's a lot of teams, I think, that could sort of fight for that last spot.
Excellent. All right. So Yale isn't the best team in the country. Prove me wrong.
Yale isn't the best team in the country? Well, who's better?
That was the question. Yale isn't the best team. It wasn't really a question, more a statement. Yale isn't the best team in the country. Prove me wrong. You know that meme. So
change my mind. You want to change my mind?
Change my mind. Yeah. That's it. Change my mind. I blew that.
Yeah, thing, change my mind. You know, I think Yale just beat the team that spent the most amount of time as anybody else at number one in the country. And I know they did it when Connor Fields was out, but if Connor Fields plays, I don't think it makes a difference. Albany's already down 3-1 and getting handled when Connor Fields is playing in that game. And Albany beat Maryland, transitive property, Yale beat Maryland, right? That's how that works. Isn't that just science?
Yeah. This year or not this year?
Yeah. Well, Yale beat Albany and Albany beat Maryland. So Yale beat Maryland.
I'm sorry. I thought you said Yale beat. The transitive. I thought you meant like.
Transitive property. So they make it. Yeah.
I'll allow it. No. No caveat or asterisks for short rest for Albany 2 days after playing Binghamton.
How hard do you really think Albany prepared?
As a good interviewer, I have to push the interviewee.
You know, I'll, you know, you want to call this a lukewarm, medium spicy take. I don't think Albany prepared for Binghamton for a minute. Wild speculation. Albany did not spend a minute of practice getting ready for Binghamton and just went out there and won because it's Albany against Binghamton. I'm sure they spent plenty of time getting ready for Yale. And to that effect, I think maybe they probably pushed Connor Fields a little bit too hard to try and get him into that game, which I think maybe was a mistake because ultimately that game doesn't really mean a whole lot, you know, doesn't really mean anything. If they win, they probably just lock up the number one overall seed, but they probably still have a pretty legit claim to the number one overall seed anyway. So I think Yale beat the number one team and they have, you know, a resume that is as good as just about anybody else's resume when it comes to beating quality opponents. And you know, I know sometimes it's like, well, the team they beat isn't that great, or, you know, they beat whatever. They beat Princeton by 8 goals, but Princeton stinks. Well, Princeton wasn't that bad. I'm pretty sure Princeton was ranked when they played. Same thing with Penn. The Bucknell loss is a rough one. The Bucknell loss is a rough one. But, you know, Bucknell did what they should do coming into that game. They played a sort of a slowed down pace. They took long possessions. They kept the ball away from Yale's offense, and they kept, you know, the faceoff X, you know, pretty even. And they just kept the ball in the stick of Will Sands for a ridiculous amount of time. And that's a pretty good blueprint to beating a team like Yale.
So, like, the quality win question, again, just have to push back. I love Yale. Yeah. Don't believe these lies by Chris. They're literally, like, my favorite non-Princeton Ivy. The school's great. I love the mascot. I love the school. You know, I visited there a few times. I dated a girl, went to law school. It's a great campus. Yeah. It's all awesome. Yale's dope. I got no animosity. But before the Albany win, is it fair to say that they – you know, it was a little light, right? I mean, they had the Cornell.
Yeah, no, that's it's totally fair to say that. You know, the Albany went dynamite. See, the Cornell win is like it just gets better every week because it turns out Cornell's awesome. Cornell wasn't playing. They weren't scoring like 20 goals a game like they are now. But you know, I would say the Bryant win is getting better because Bryant is looking like a pretty decent team, and I think Penn and Princeton are good teams. Like Penn is still in the top 15 in the RPI, which is a dumb stat, but it's still a good team, and they just absolutely just put the clamps on the Penn offense. Penn managed 6 goals in that game, and I was there, and like frankly, it's a miracle they managed to get to 6. Like the Yale defense looked like just a well-oiled machine in that game. The Bucknell one stinks, and I mean they put up, you know, 4 touchdowns against Brown, which is
That was like a. I felt like it was brushback pitch to me because that's when the meme really started to take off, and then I was just like, yeah. 27 goals, and I was like, all right,
yeah,
I get it, Yale.
You know, when I was a kid growing up, the rule was like you don't go past 20. Like past 20 is like poor sportsmanship or like bad form. Like yeah, you put 20 on somebody, you beat them. But Brown put up 15, so like you kind of got to keep scoring because they're gonna score some more. So. You know, I was in my heart of hearts, I was like, please let somebody get to 30. Maybe they'll get to 30, but no 30.
I was convinced there was like some 2016 beef, maybe Brown, you know, when they were running it, they ran up the score. But that game was only a 2-point goal. So, yeah, I guess Shea just wanted to just make sure that they were well ahead of them before that. So,
you get Yale Harvard this weekend, which I think is more intriguing maybe than it might seem. Yale is, I think, you know, maybe ripe for a letdown, obviously, after beating Albany. And the last 4 regular season games between Yale and Harvard have been 1-goal games, you know, exactly. Regardless of where the teams are ranked. So, like, a Yale-Harvard game, they're gonna play each other well. They're going to play each other hard. And, you know, we'll see how that winds up. But that would mix things up in a big way. I don't know what the committee does if Harvard just, you know, Yale eats a loss to Harvard in the last week of the regular season. But
that is my upset pick.
The way the season has gone, that is what's going to happen. Like Harvard's going to win like, you know, 11-10 in overtime or something like that.
But for real, like heavy lies the crown. Like once you're number one, and you're playing your biggest, I mean, this is the game on Yale's schedule. Like, you know, the funny things happen, you know, so let's close out with some fun rapid fire stuff. Like sure. Some of those shows, you know, more lighthearted stuff. So let's go with your favorite place to eat at home. And well, let's go even from New Canaan or, you know, wherever you want to start.
Yeah. The best place to eat in New Canaan and for my money in most of Fairfield County is a place called Tequila Mockingbird in New Canaan. It is a Mexican restaurant that does like classical.
I love the pun.
It's got its own name. I mean, you can't knock the name. It's been in New Canaan for like 30 years. It does classic Mexican food that is as good as any Mexican food you'll have just about anywhere. And I, one of my hobbies that I am a secret, not so secret, I guess, tequila connoisseur and snob. And Tequila Mockingbird has one of the largest collections of tequila anywhere on the Eastern Seaboard. Forget like, you know, in the area. Like there are hundreds of different varieties of tequila at Tequila Mockingbird. And, you know, you go there, you try them, you learn a little something about Mexican food, about Mexican spirits. And the bartender, my buddy Jay, is there and is always going to treat you right. I will go to Tequila Mockingbird just about any day somebody asks me if I want to go.
Fantastic. I'll definitely put that on our list. Favorite UConn basketball player?
Ever? It's tough because there's answers where it's like, I love this guy because he was just awesome at basketball. And there's also answers like, I love this guy because how could you not want to tune in and watch him? You know, so like Emeka Okafor is I thought was great. Obviously, he was like, you know, a double major and graduated in 3 years and had a great NBA career. I'll say it's great. He had a really solid NBA career. But he was that's the kind of player I like, is a guy like Emeka who was, you know, like a, you know, sort of a big four kind of, you know, bulky guy, you know, banger on the board, stuff like that. So big Emeka fan. And how could you not love Khalid El-Amin? Like, how could you not love tuning in to watch a guy who looks like he came from the YMCA into your gym and is just like running everybody off the court?
Was a game he hit like a game-winning shot, jumped on the scoreboard and patted his belly because everyone was like,
the dude was fat. Like, let's call a spade here. Like, he wasn't thin. That's for damn sure. So
he wasn't Savella, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So favorite Jim Calhoun rant.
Oh, not a dime.
This is out of term of endearment because I love Jimmy. That's as we talked.
Yeah, not a dime back. Not a dime back. I'd like to be retired someday. Oh yeah. The wonder of that is the guy who asked him. This is the way I heard it anyway from some people who I guess were there. But the guy who asked the question about that wasn't even, you know, like from like a newspaper or anything like that. He was essentially like just a blogger. And he was like taking it upon himself to do like this investigative journalism kind of thing into like the amount of money that Jim Calhoun makes and why it's bad for college and like all that kind of stuff. And as he asked that question, there's like an audible groan in the room.
Yeah.
And then Calhoun is like, does the whole not a dime back thing. And everyone is like, come on, man. And he says to the other reporters, I wouldn't have to ask these questions if you guys did. And at that point, it's like you could hear him being like, carried out. It's like, oh, what a great moment for my boy Jim Calhoun.
Exactly. And reporters never turn on their own. So
you know they hated him. Yeah, yeah. So you know he's not one of their own.
I love when he got up and like started stretching. And he was like, get some facts and come back to me.
Get some with like, you know, we make X millions of dollars for this university. We turn it over every single year. I was like, God bless you, Jim Calhoun, for hitting them with this. I love you.
I was hoping you said that. That was definitely my favorite as well. Favorite actor?
Favorite actor? You know, I'm a big De Niro guy. It's tough. Mm. It's tough lately. Like my growing up years were like the De Niro prime. So we had Heat. We had a lot of the De Niro classics that we love. Obviously, we watched The Godfather growing up in my house.
Casino, of course. That was great.
Yeah, Casino. You know, obviously, Goodfellas. Those are the kind of things where, you know, when my dad was alive, if he turned the TV on and he found, like, Goodfellas or The Godfather or anything like that, like, forget it. Like, you weren't getting the TV remote back until the movie ended. Even if it was on, like, you know, AMC or something, and it was like from 3 to 8:30, The Godfather's on. Well, that's what's on the TV from 3 to 8:30 today, guys.
Afternoon set, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm definitely a big De Niro guy. I really enjoyed Meet the Parents, but since then it's been kind of tough in the De Niro world. I'm hoping for a nice comeback picture one of these days.
Sticking with cinema, favorite movie.
Favorite movie.
You can give me three if it's too hard to do one.
It's hard. It is hard. Wow, God, I got to think about that. I'm going to say in no particular order, The Godfather is in the top three. Let's see. I really like Heat. I said Heat already, but, you know, Heat is a classic for me.
Oh, of course.
And then another top three, Bad Boys 2.
Bad Boys 2.
How far down the list of greatest movies of all time do you have to go to reach Bad Boys 2? Because I'm going to tell you right now, it's not that you're not going past like 12.
It's not objectionable that's in your top three at all. Gabrielle Union, she's always wonderful. But
Bad Boys 2.
Sorry,
guys, I liked one, but it just doesn't hold a candle to Bad Boys 2.
No, Bad Boys 2 is
Bad Boys 1 just on steroids, just like jacked up to another level, and everything is just way more fun. I love everything about Bad Boys 2. Yeah.
That's
and the rest of that list is probably like sports movies. Like I love Hoosiers and Rocky and, you know, those kind of classics as well. You know, Caddyshack, we can call a sports movie, sure. That kind of stuff.
That's great. But a few more. Sure. Music guy, favorite musician or group?
That I've ever enjoyed listening to. Like,
oh, yeah, you know, if you're about to go on a road trip type thing, or, you know, even when you were a favorite, when you were younger.
Yeah, no, music. If I'm driving from here to like, to go to Baltimore to see a game, I'm probably starting the ride with like a nice, like a Tom Petty album or something like that.
To get
things moving. I mean, that's just a great road trip. Great Absolutely. Road trip artist there, Tom Petty. So I like a lot of the classics now, you know, Tom Petty, Springsteen, that kind of stuff. And, you know, more recently, I'm big into like Kings of Leon and the Strokes and those kind of groups. A nice alt rock genre guy.
No, of course. Favorite place to eat when you go into the city?
Favorite place in the city?
Or you can do favorite pizza. That's always unacceptable.
Yeah, well, when I go to the city, I'm going for pizza. And there is a place. There's a couple places that I really like. One is in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. It's called Pauly G's. And that's one of the better pizzas you'll ever have. And then there's, I think it's in Bushwick. Roberta's in Bushwick, which is like, you know, now it's got that rep where you got to show up and wait for a million hours and everything to get a pizza. But it's at one point when you didn't have to do that, it was great to go to Roberta's. Roberta's is also good.
And I was just going to ask, since you mentioned your family Sicilian background, have you been back to the old country?
You know, I never have. It's awful that I never have, and I feel bad about it. It's one of those things where I've been planning that trip for 10 years and just never did it. And now, you know, I'm about to have kids, and it's like there's no way I'm doing it anytime soon. So at some point in my life, like it's at the top, essentially, of the bucket list. You know, my dad's ancestry is his dad was from is Sicilian, obviously, and his mom is from the Basque country, which is, you know, a little piece of land between France and Spain that's very much its own culture that is not as influenced as the from the two countries that border it. Mm-hmm. As you might think, they got their own language, they got their own food, they got everything. So
they got their own independence movement.
Like, yeah, they got their own train bombings. It's great. Yeah. So I would love to go to those two places very, very much. My mom is off the boat from Ireland, and obviously I would love to do that too. But I think, you know, she still makes that trip every once in a while. No, I think it would be easier for me to try and jump on there, jump on a trip with my mom and try and go back there and everything, see some family I have there. But, you know, going back to Italy or going to the Basque country, a place where I really don't have much family anymore, but just being able to go and sort of explore your roots that way is definitely on the bucket list. But I have not actually been.
No, right on. And since you are about to be a father, picked out names, or if you want to share, obviously don't have to.
We have names. We are not. It's like the only thing we're keeping to ourselves about all this is names.
Right. Do you know? Can you reveal gender? Or
yeah, we're having twins. We're having we're going from no kids to two kids. We're really, really excited. I'm sitting in the room that used to be my office and is now the nursery. So I'm staring at two cribs and they're just staring right back. And it's one boy and one girl. Fraternal twins, boy and a girl. We're pumped to get the whole family building thing over with in the one pregnancy, and we'll all set. We'll have our kids, and that'll be that. So yeah, they're due in like early July. So my lacrosse coverage career will probably come to a grinding halt for a few months there for the rest of the summer. But you know, we'll see how that goes. Cross that bridge.
Well, you got your priorities in the right order, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, the great thing is they're going to come right after, you know, for the most part, after the college and the high school seasons end. So you know, I got what? Like a whole lot of times where I can do, all right, so we can get these kids acclimated to the world, you know, we can get them all set up, and then by the time next season rolls around, next spring gets here, all right, you know, it'll be easier for me to escape for a few hours on a Saturday to go cover a game.
Exactly. You know, shout out to Mrs. Aristi, of course.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, my lovely wife, Amanda, who honestly, I don't know why she lets me do it, but she lets me leave the house on the weekend for hours at a time to go watch a lacrosse game, and I love her dearly for it. I couldn't be happier that she allows me to do that.
Awesome. Well, hopefully UConn has a team in there, so you can have both.
UConn, if you're listening, I will buy season tickets tomorrow. I will come to stores to watch games, whatever it takes. Please have a Division I lacrosse team.
Fantastic. Dad, this was awesome. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. I hope everyone who's listening, enjoyed it as well. So thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This has been great. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Arestia.
I was about to ask for your handle. I knew it, but just to shout it out for people. But this should hopefully go up. We're going to try to get this up Saturday just because Ryan just has to do some little magic. But if you can get it up Friday night, I will. But Dan, this was awesome. Good talking to you, and shout out to you.
All right. Thanks so much, man. This has been great. All right. I really appreciate you giving me some time.
Oh, of course. Talk to you soon, man.